high quality and unprocessed and nutritious foods, who doesn't want to eat those? And if you take that step at school and they follow it and they do it at home, we have just changed the mindset of how that one family eats.
From the blog Random Sweets, I'm Stacey Mergenthal, and this is Funeral Potatoes and Wool Mittens, a show for people who embrace the warm and cozy spirit of everyday living in the Midwest. In this episode, we're going back to school, to the school cafeteria, that is. And although I do ask about good old square school lunch pizza slices and the pairing of cinnamon rolls and chili, my guests, Carla Sauvel and Amanda Riley, are spilling the beans on how the Huron South Dakota School District is implementing farm to school. In addition to being one of the very few public school nutrition programs that cooks from scratch and bakes all of their own bread, they are also striving to serve fresh and local foods to the 2,200 students they have each day. You'll come to the end of this episode knowing how to champion your school district to cultivate a farm-to-school initiative if it isn't already, and if you're a farmer, rancher, or producer, how you can help revolutionize school lunch in your area. And you'll also come away with knowing how many pounds of cheese and the secret mixture of cheeses that they use to make 132 commercial-sized sheet pans of pizza in one day. Now, all the links to the resources that we talk about today are in the show notes and then also on my website, randomsweets.com. So grab your pencil box and sharpener because it is time to learn how local agriculture and school nutritionists are positively impacting student well-being and benefiting the community. Carla and Amanda, welcome to Funeral Potatoes and Wool Mittens, your very own episode.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us today. We get to hear about something that I know nothing about, but am super interested in learning more. As I was getting ready for this episode, I kept finding new documents and new websites and learning all kinds of things and so down a rabbit hole about what this farm to school program means. So I'm excited to hear about it from you and pass on information to people if they're like, hey, I'd love for my school district, or I'm a farmer and I would love to be involved in this. How can we support agriculture? We're in the Midwest and we're heavily in agritourism area and region.
Yes,
so
definitely.
Yeah. So you guys go ahead and Carla, if you want to start, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do. And
okay. My name is Carla Sauvel and I have 23 plus years in school food service. 18 of those has been as the kitchen manager here in the Huron District. And this was my first year as farm to school coordinator. And that sort of evolved from retiring in June from full time and not really wanting to be unemployed and wanting to stay here with the district, who am I have enjoyed working for all these years. So this opportunity sort of came about for me to work part-time in this position in something that we've always wanted to include in our nutrition department. So it really was just, it just sort of happened as a blessing. So it's nice to be able to still be a part of it, but I can set aside all of the, oh, I don't have to take care of that part now. I can just focus on one thing. So it's been very good for me.
Right. And a lot of times resources like this or programs that you want to start, it is the being short on money or short on resources and having the people to do it. So it's good. Uh-huh. I'm glad they have you.
Thank you.
Amanda?
I'm Amanda Riley, the nutrition director for the Huron School District. I've been in this role, this is my fourth year, and I have been in food service for 17 years.
Where else were you in food service?
Here, prior to that, I was the assistant cook, trainer coordinator, and satellite. And then before that, I worked as the assistant manager at Taco John's for quite a few years.
We all love Taco John's around here, too.
Yes.
And they got their apple grandes back for the fall. I know these things, the important things. All right. Well, let's get into the farm to school program and tell us, I know Carly, you'll probably, since you're the director or the coordinator of this program, you'll probably speak most today, and that's great. Tell me about the program and how it works. And you said you've been in this role for a year now?
Well, not quite. Probably, I would say 6 months really is about all that we've been at it. When I started July 1st, came back to work July 1st after retirement, and that's when we began this. And really, I really didn't know what, well, I'll be honest, I really didn't know what I was going to do and what I was doing. So I just jumped in and I started contacting people I knew, people who knew people. And we started mostly with a grower that we've had a lot of years of experience with in our fresh fruit and vegetable program. And he has grown produce for us for that. And so I just called him up and said, so here's the opportunity I've been given. Will you be a part of it with us? And he was ecstatic about it. And so I started with him and said, this is kind of where I'm at. This is what I think I want to do. And he was so helpful in directing me as far as what you can include. Also, this was midsummer, and he'd already, everything he had was planted and really growing well. So mm-hmm. he could only project a bit of what he could still help us with out, you know, help us out with for the fall. So it wasn't like we had a lot. And yet when I look back at the amount of things that we were able to procure from him and a couple other growers, we really had a nice harvest of foods that we were able to share with the kids. So I just had to get out there and start asking. And that's mm-hmm. what I did.
Let's go to the beginning of what is the Farm to School program.
Farm to School has been, I do not know how long it has been a thing, mm-hmm. but it is a large movement that is nationwide, and it encourages procuring and purchasing local foods, and doesn't have to be just fresh produce, local foods determined by your district as to what local is, and getting those foods into your school nutrition program so that you can eliminate the processing part of it. You can eliminate the, sourcing, you know, lettuce from California that's, you know, picked and packaged and crated and loaded and driven and delivered and dropped maybe along the ways. And, you know, we can cut all that out and we can pick it one day and serve it the next. And so that really is to give the students the most fresh produce, locally grown without a lot of the additives and the other stuff that you don't need to eat.
Mm-hmm. And so you have, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
And along with Carla was saying, it's not just produce. So we are one of the very few school districts that cooks from scratch and bakes all of our own bread fresh every single day. So we actually just got the okay to get some local beef. So that will be going in our meals upcoming in January. And we're working on a grant to get a grain mill, so that we can get local wheat to put in our fresh baked bread every day.
So you'll mill your own flour.
That's correct. What we're looking towards.
Holy cow, you guys. School lunch has gotten a lot better.
We decided to go big.
We go big. We are kind of a pioneering district. And we just said, okay, well, if we're going to do this, then we're going to jump in with both feet. So
how cool that when you say that you'll have beef, local beef. I mean, even for the farmer or the rancher at that point, I guess, to know that their beef is being used in the school system somewhere nearby. I mean, that's pretty rewarding, I think, for those people too, I would guess.
Yes, definitely.
What does the Huron School District, I mean, how far is local? So it's not just Huron, do you kind of do regional?
My vision of local would be to include state-grown products. You know, some of, right now we are doing some test baking with some whole wheat that we have received from clear out west, out by Newell, South Dakota, which is clear out by the western border. And so that's just what their part of, that's what they do. That's their agricultural piece. And so I just went on the internet and found South Dakota growers, and they came up. And so I emailed them and said, would you be interested? Yes, we'll send you some samples. So we've done some test baking with them. So I feel that local to us is anything statewide, with our main focus on being within our eastern South Dakota area.
How do the seasons affect? So as I was thinking about this, of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, think of all the fresh fruits and vegetables they would have on their salad bar, and all those cucumbers and strawberries. And then I'm like, Stacy, strawberries don't grow in August and September. So how do you deal with the seasonality of fruits and vegetables in South Dakota and the school year not starting until about September?
Well, so that was sort of a challenge for us this year, just beginning this, not knowing who or what was available. And so just by making some calls and doing a little snooping, really, is what I did, I was able to find enough to get us through probably, we probably served into early November with, you know, winter squash and stuff like that. But copious amounts of tomatoes and cucumbers and all of that right when school started was available to us. A long range vision of mine as well is to meet with several of our producers slash growers in January and kind of put forth a plan with them that tells them, so every time we have cucumbers, we need X many pounds to serve to all of our students. We'll serve these cucumbers 3 times in our 6-week cycle. We would need that many pounds each time. Sort of spreading out the growing part between several different growers would give everybody a fair chance and would give us more of a planning procedure as far as our menus and, you know, that 6-week cycle goes. Getting back to the challenge of the seasons here in South Dakota, another thing I would like to do is to visit with them in January and see what they could plant that we could process ourselves, that we could freeze, that we could, you know, tomatoes can be frozen whole and brought back out and blended up to add to spaghetti sauce. We can freeze carrots. We can blanch and freeze our own food here in our own kitchen. So there's still an opportunity to serve locally grown products as far as produce into the winter months. But also we've been able to procure some local honey, and we use honey in our bread baking. So that can go all year long. The beef can go year long. So we can do farm to school all winter. It just won't in your head be like this beautiful salad bar of fresh cucumbers.
All that planning that goes into it, both on your part, the district's part, and the farmer's part.
There was, for this season anyway, there was a lot of, well, what do you have that'll be ready for Monday? And there was, you know, what they were able to give us, which we are very grateful for, everything we were able to get. We were extremely grateful for. You know, we just had to work that into what the menu called for that day. And another thing is, if we can work with them as to what they can produce for us coming up, then that alleviates a lot of the managers at the middle school and high school in what they're purchasing. Then they'll know that, oh, Carla is getting, she's securing X many pounds of cucumbers. I don't need to order that this week. So it's kind of a dance between all of us. I think sitting down with the growers this year will just make things much easier to navigate.
Right. And once you get through a full year and full season, getting it figured out, do the students have some favorites?
I know that I've had students come into my office, both on the, you have to help me remember what they were.
Roasted potatoes.
Roasted potatoes and squash. Was it the squash?
I think it was the squash as well.
That we just let them serve and take themselves. And they said that they loved them and that they want us to serve those more often. And yeah, we just chopped them up, put some garlic pepper on them and roasted them. I mean, it was pretty simple.
Yeah, you don't have to worry at all where you stand with kids. They'll tell you exactly what they think. Mm-hmm. And they do. We did a taste testing on election day. We did turnip fries here. I cooked the fries, went out, and I let them all taste. And then they got to cast their ballot for a yes or a no. Mm. On it. And it was really pretty even. There was, you know, about half and half were yeses and no's. A couple, well, maybe, you know, I'm not sure on that. But they were very receptive to trying it and all in on the, oh, I get to vote on this. I get to have a say in this. Right. Do you think this, will this be part of the meal? Or, oh, is this going to be part of the meal? Mm-hmm. So they're just as willing to be a part of something as a grown-up is. And I'm going to have a say in this. And so by giving them that opportunity, it's more likely they'll come back and say, oh, they've got those blank on the menu today. I liked those. I'm having those today.
I didn't like tomatoes until, say, 10 years ago, which means I didn't use fresh tomatoes for my kids, which means if they weren't introduced to them at home, you know, they probably weren't taking them at school lunch either. So that all snowballs into them trying new things and being able to, like you said, say, oh, I like this, or I'd prefer that I don't eat these.
Yeah.
So did the turnip fries end up as something on the menu?
They have not yet, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Okay.
I think that if we were able to take them and roast them with, you know, maybe some winter squash and potatoes, the flavors would all, I think they would be much more appealing. Interestingly, the flavor of a roasted fried turnip is much different than when you're cutting and peeling a fresh one. It's okay. Pretty pungent, like a radish when you're cutting them. But boy, when you saute them a bit and add some seasoning, they are really, really good.
They're very comparable to a fresh cut French fry.
Really?
I mean,
who would not have thought?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have either.
We wouldn't have either until we were introduced to them. And
so you might not even need a side of ranch, huh?
Yeah.
Well, doesn't everything need a side of ranch?
Right. So what are the benefits to the students, to the community, to the school district, and to the growers and producers? You kind of have four different groups here that are being served or affected by this. Let's start with the students first. This farm to school program, I mean, you're implementing it because you, in your heart, you know that there's benefits to all these groups. What is it for the students?
I have seen families shopping as I'm shopping for groceries. It's processed everything. It's processed a box of this. Well, we'll just get a box of this because it's fast and easy. Many families are busy, and if they're cooking at home at all, I am glad that they're doing that. But what if the kids were able to eat real food at school and go home and say, we had roasted potatoes today. We didn't have a bagged French fry, which there is nothing wrong with that, but if you can take it one step above that and do it and cook real food, then they might say, oh, we have this at school today. Let's have some of that. Let's buy some of that and have it at home. High quality and unprocessed and nutritious foods, who doesn't want to eat those? And if you take that step at school and they follow it and they do it at home, we have just changed the mindset of how that one family eats, because those students are the ones that are going to grow up and be leaders. And if they know where their food comes from and they take an interest in the gardening part of it or the growing part of it and harvesting and in turn the consuming of it, I think that's how students win.
What about the school district? I mean, there's a reason why, Amanda, you as the nutrition director said, this is a program we want to bring in and invest time and hire a part-time person. You have Carla in here.
I mean, really, I think it's just growing the meals that then we're able to serve because of the quality of the products that we're serving. I mean, that's our whole life here is feeding kids. Mm-hmm. And we want to feed kids the best options out there that we can.
When you are able to purchase a school lunch, when a student can purchase a school lunch for really a minimal amount and get a full meal that covers all the food groups and part of it can be fresh, it really is the best deal in town. I know a director long ago told me that we are the largest restaurant in town, and he was right. We are.
Yeah.
And we have the biggest customer base in town. Oh. He told me that too, and he was absolutely right. And so what we're offering them and what they're taking is really the best value for their dollar that you can get in Huron. And if part of that meal, part or more than half, can end up being locally grown, that supports our producers, that supports our community, and makes our district a step ahead of maybe another district.
And you guys are already steps ahead by just scratch cooking and baking. I'm blown away by that. So then the growers and the producers, like you're saying, Carla, how does this program then benefit them and the community?
So there are family gardeners who garden. They raise a garden for a hobby. There are families that raise a garden, farm families that raise a garden to have food for themselves and into the winter. I know there's still families that are doing canning and freezing mm-hmm. in our area. And so those are all things that are generations old. And I was raised on a farm and everything was homemade and everything was grown and everything was canned, frozen to be used all winter long. So there are farm families that are doing it for themselves. There are also growers who have acreages that are growing for sale, such as Plainview Farms that we have a relationship with. They live over by Bryant, South Dakota. And he has been our fresh fruit and vegetable contact for several years. And he grows for his own family as well. He grows because he knows it's nutritious, healthy, and that's the lifestyle that they have adopted for their family. And his partnership with us has been financially beneficial to him as well. And also he's growing so that students and community and anybody that has a question about it knows how much better it is for you.
Mm-hmm. What about the community? Are there ways that the community in general benefits?
We were able to secure some items from our Beetle County Conservation District. They have two greenhouses, not even about a half a mile from the middle school. That again, I just stumbled onto. I just made an email and I made a phone call and got a contact person and said, so this is who I am. This is what we're doing. She said, well, this is what I've got. And I said, perfect. I went over there and I walked into this greenhouse and it was just lush with sweet corn and zucchini and tomatoes. And she said, we just don't have the time to go to the farmer's market or make it worth it. So I said, well, we want to buy. And she said, well, we want to sell. And so that's what happened. And she supplied us with sweet corn this late summer. We got to do sweet corn at one of our elementaries, pounds and pounds of peppers and tomatoes and cucumbers, cilantro, basil. We dried some basil to have for herbs this winter in spaghetti sauce and all of that stuff. So the impact for the community for her was to be just a half a mile away. And for them to be a partner was good planning for her. And she will actually be one of our producers that we meet with in January. And she wants to be in on what else she can provide for us for next school year.
That's got to be exciting for the producers too, I'm guessing, to get into the district program.
Yes, definitely. And we're constantly searching for more. I mean, how amazing would it be if all of our cucumbers could come locally? You know, and then that's putting that money back into the community as well, because then it's coming from local sources. We feed 2,200 kids lunch a day. So the amount of pounds that we need for things is just out of this world. But if we were able to find enough producers, I feel as though we could do it.
I think we can.
Did you have to make any accommodations or make any changes? Did you have to buy any new equipment? Now you're talking about doing flower, but
up until this point, we have not.
Okay.
Going forward and growing this program more, it's definitely a potential. We just haven't had to yet.
Part of why I wanted to do this is so that if other school districts are interested in doing something like this, are there ways to get funding? I mean, you're already allowed as a school district a certain dollar amount and you have a budget and that type of thing. You prefer to be spending that locally, which is so cool. Where is some of the funding coming from? Do you have to have more funding? Does it cost more to do this? Or are you like, no, you can do this without having to ask for more money or increasing your budget?
Right. Really, so far, we haven't had to change much of anything. We sat down with the growers and discussed in length how the budget works for the school district and what our prices are for the stuff that we get from distributors, and just asked them, you know, are you willing to work with those prices? We have to pay reasonable prices for everything that we get. So they were able to work with us. They don't feel as though they're getting less money than they normally would from another place. And we don't feel like we're being overcharged for the products. Some of them might be a little bit higher because it is fresh produce. I mean, it is gorgeous stuff that we're getting, but it's very, very reasonable, very comparable to the prices that we're getting off of our truck already. A huge instance of this would be watermelon. So we live in watermelon country.
Oh yeah, you're in the Forestburg melon area, aren't you?
Yep. And our distributor, currently watermelons are above $16 per watermelon. Like, the price just skyrocketed and I don't know why. But we can buy local for what we $6?
$6 a melon.
A melon. So of course we bought hundreds of melons.
Plus they taste way better over there.
Right. They're local. So that one especially was a no-brainer in cost. I mean, quite a bit lower. So it really worked in our benefit. And the local growers benefits then as well, because they were able to sell mass quantities of watermelon and not have to drive them all over to little markets and stuff.
How do you market those to let students or parents and staff know that those fresh products, those are from Forestburg melons? Or I keep saying that one because that's the one that I know, but I know there's plenty of other producers over there of watermelons and such, but how do you let people know this is grown down the road?
So every time we serve something at school that is local, we put a sign up that says where it comes from. Sometimes we include pictures of the farm so that they know more of where it's coming from. We will post on Facebook different things that we're getting from local growers. We have a farm to school newsletter that talks about all of the things that we're getting from local growers. We've definitely let our community know that this is our goal, to do as much local as possible.
What are some of the challenges that you've had to overcome to get this up and running and to remain sustainable?
For myself, really the biggest thing was not having the time to dedicate to contacting, ordering, figuring out who was going to do the preparing or delivering and all of that stuff. And that is where Carla came in.
So Amanda is right. It takes an extreme amount of time to just, first of all, to begin something, to begin anything. You have to, well, where do I go to start this? And so the farm to school website has a plethora of information on it. It's got information for buyers and growers and sellers and the rules involved. And it's an astounding website that I first went to. South Dakota has a really lively farm to school network. So I went to their information as well. And they have a resource guide that has a list of many, many growers in it, producers. We also in South Dakota have a Dakota Rural Action group that is highly involved in getting farm to school gardens, you know, that. So there's a lot of information out there. So after you do just hours and hours of reading and highlighting and taking notes, and then I just, you know, started with the people that were X many miles away from me that I thought, is that feasible? Could I make that work? What would that look like? And got leads from other growers that, from Plainview Farms, was able to direct me to, well, I know a guy who knows a guy. I got to go see a guy about a horse kind of thing.
We are in the Midwest after all.
Yeah. So he just led me, okay, this person does beef. This person does, I can get you, I can get you eggs from this person. I can get you, I know someone who might be interested in planting wheat for you. Mm. So it just became not having any information to having, wow, now what do I do with all this information? Mm-hmm. And so I just really made a plan about then to get in touch with all of them in January and say, look, so here is our menu. This is what we could use every time. How much of that can you grow? And so it really just went to about five growers that I feel that I could manage for the school year and sitting down and making a plan with them.
Let's kind of transition a little bit away from the meals at school, but more into sort of the education and the experiences. There's different components to the farm to school program. Do you do that part of it, like having a school garden or doing different field trips to some of the farms, or is there hands-on learning, guest speakers, any of that sort of component to your program? Yet this is pretty new, so you have a lot on your plate. No pun intended.
You are right. It is pretty new, but those are all things that I would like to, if I had to project in 5 years, where would I want this to be? I see a school garden and I see field trips and I see some of our growers coming in and making some kind of presentation, if possible. So if you invest the time in kids being a part of it, they're going to give you back exactly what you ask from them. And so I think it would be incredible if we could get the growers to go in and, this spring, we're going to plant bean seeds with your class. And then we're going to take these beans after they sprout back out to our farm and we're going to grow them. And then we're going to bring them back and you guys will get to eat them. I also would like to do, like I said, the school garden, but that's going to take a lot of planning. But I know that right. There's people who would help me with it. It's just a matter of another outreach project of mine, and I'll just have to. This is the year I'm going to try and go after it. So mm-hmm. We do have an event coming up. I hope in January at one of our elementary schools. They're going to start a Laura Ingalls Wilder unit as part of their social studies. And before they begin reading the book, they're going to have like an afternoon event with their fourth graders where they're going to kind of give them a taste of what Laura Ingalls Wilder was up against, who she was, why she wrote her books, what her lifestyle was like as a child growing up in a rough time of our history. And so I'm going to try to go in and do a food part of that with some local products. So that is one education piece that's coming up.
When I went to school back in the 70s and 80s, school lunch was just something you'd go and do for 20 minutes, right? You guys have turned school lunch into learning and fun and an experience. And that's just, it's great to see that moving in that direction too.
If we're awarded this grant and we can get this grain milling machine, I'd like to be able to have the high school facts classes come over and watch the whole process from beginning, have them help our bakers bake fresh bread that they're going to eat so that they can see, it from beginning to end. I hope that will become an education piece as well.
When you are talking about in the summertime, there's the different vegetables and things that you can get. Do you think that you'll have people in the kitchens in the summer canning and preserving?
I don't see us canning anything, but I do see the potential for us to do some blanching and freezing. as a commercial kitchen, and we're part of National School Lunch. We're an inspected facility. Mm-hmm. So we would be able to do that.
Yeah. So like your tomatoes and things that you're talking about, you'd be able to blanch them and freeze them. Okay.
Yes.
And we do also run a summer feeding program. So we would be able to use local in the summer as well.
What is the summer feeding program?
So in a normal year, it is runs very similarly to the school year. This coming year, our plan is to do grab-and-go lunches only. That would mean that a family could come get a bag of food that has Monday lunch, Tuesday breakfast and lunch, and Wednesday breakfast and lunch all in the same bag, and then come back again on Thursday and get Thursday lunch, Friday breakfast and lunch, and Saturday breakfast and lunch all in the same bag. And this would also be, again, same requirements as during the school year. So would have to have the meat or meat alternate, the grain, the fruits, the vegetables, and the milk in order to make a complete meal in those bags. So we could definitely use fresh produce in those bags for families.
Okay. So you will have a use for some of that in the summer.
Yes.
What about recipes? Now, I was thinking, oh, it'd be cool if they'd share a recipe, but you're cooking or making things on mass quantity amounts. is there a recipe that you are going to share with us that I'll be able to put on the blog post that goes along with this?
I am planning on sending you our recipe for the turnip fries.
Okay.
And for a dipping sauce that we used. We were introduced to turnip fries this late summer from our friends at Plainview Farms. We went and toured their farm, and they invited us to a lovely lunch as part of our visit. We talked about what we anticipated for farm to school coming up, and they served us a beautiful lunch, including these turnip fries and a dipping sauce that she made from scratch with, you know, all of her own herbs and stuff. So
Okay. We
put on a luncheon each beginning of the school year for our new teachers that join our district. And so we made our luncheon this year mostly farm to school.
Mm.
And we really stepped out of the usual and decided we'd serve them turnip fries. And so we did. And you would not believe the response we got. They could not believe how delicious it was and how you got this where? You got this locally? You guys made this? Yes, we did it all. I mean, and it was so well received.
You're increasing lunch sales within your staff too, right? You're like, hey, look what we can do. This is the best restaurant in town.
Definitely.
If somebody wanted to learn more about Carla, there's a farm to school website.
It's farmtoschool.org, or they can go to the Patrick Leahy National Farm to School. You just do a Google search for that and it'll come right up. Locally, I would start with your cooperative extension agents. Our SDSU is our contact for that. They're our extension unit, I guess, if you want to say. Also, any state nutrition office, ours happens to be our CANS office in Pierre at our state capitol. So if you're near state capitol, whoever helps govern your lunch program and your national school lunch.
Okay.
Yes, national school or National Farm to School has a Facebook page, and I'm there on Instagram and LinkedIn, I think, as well. I was reading this morning. So.
Okay. Well, it's almost time to serve lunch, so we can wrap it up here, but I have a couple more questions. Do you have the school lunch recipe from the 80s? We love that pizza from the 80s, and nobody knows how to make it, like in a sheet pan, the squares.
You mean the pizza that we still make?
The pizza that we still make.
Do you really?
Yes, we do.
What's so magical about it? Why did we love that so much? Because it was in squares?
I think for me, and I was in school in the 70s and 80s as well.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, growing up on a small farm in a very small community, really very sheltered, which I look back on and I am very grateful of, that was pizza. We don't have pizza at home. I mean, we get pizza at school. that was the allure for me. Now everybody has pizza three times a week.
Yeah.
And but still there is something about school pizza that is just, that is just a thing.
I know.
I don't know what it is that is so wonderful about it.
We bake the pizza crust from scratch.
Of course you do.
We do.
And we just make a huge assembly line and make 132 sheet pans, 16 slices each of pizza.
Wow. And I was going to say, the sheet pans you're talking about are large, commercial size. Yes. They're not the little cookie sheets that we're talking about at home. What kind of cheese do you use on it? Maybe that's what makes it so good.
We do a mix of mozzarella and cheddar.
Oh, cheddar. Okay.
Yep. So again, just mass quantities. We use like 260 pounds of cheese every time we do it.
Well, maybe that's my problem. I'm not going big enough. What about the Midwest school lunch, the pairing of cinnamon rolls and chili? Yeah, still do that.
That is still a thing.
Homemade chili and fresh baked cinnamon rolls.
What? Where did that start? Like everybody claims, oh, it was in Iowa or it was in this town here. And I just think, well, would it have been on some sort of government lunch program that on this day you serve? I mean, how did that happen?
I honestly don't know. It was actually Lindy, when she came here, was like, why don't you guys serve chili and cinnamon rolls? And I'm like, I'll try it. See if the kids like it. They love it. Absolutely love it.
So you hadn't been doing it until my friend Lindy. Okay. Oh my gosh, you guys. And I don't ever make chili and cinnamon rolls at home. I mean,
me neither.
Well, I don't either. But why is it such a great thing at school?
I don't know. Okay. Well, do you have any stories or anything that you want to share?
I think I would just like to offer to anybody listening out there who's contemplating, gosh, I wish I could do that, but I can't grind my own flour. So if your neighbor has extra zucchini, which everybody everywhere in the Midwest has extra zucchini at the end of summer, I promise you, if you want zucchini, you'll be able to find it. If you want to try zucchini, you can slice it and serve it fresh. You can roast it. You can make casseroles out of it. Whatever you would like to do with a zucchini one day for your school lunch program, you just did farm to school. So people who are listening, I want you to take away from this is that you don't have to dive in like we did and tread water, trying to keep your head above water, figuring out now what did I get into. You can limit it to just August and September. You can do only tomatoes. You can do whatever you choose, whatever you purchase from someone who grew up locally, and you are serving it in your school. You just did farm to school. Or you can be radical like we are and really get in deep.
Why are you so passionate about this program? You really care. You're doing this because you really care. You didn't say, oh, here's a part-time job.
You've been
smiling this whole time. I can feel it.
I have been. I just think, like I said, I was raised on a farm. Everything was homemade. Fresh is so much better. I mean, you can go to the store and you can buy less, and it gets to the store as quickly as possible. You know, they're following regulations that they have to follow as well. But just think about going out to your own garden and picking a handful of lettuce and spinach and bringing it in and making a salad. How much fresher can it get? So the quality is just so much better for you. I'm a beginning gardener myself. Now having a little bit more time, I just can't wait to get back out there this spring and just get my hands in the dirt and produce something from a seed that I now am going to be able to eat in the wintertime. I just think that is a phenomenal concept that people have lost sight of, and many people don't even, you know, there's some kids that they don't even know that milk comes from a cow. They're just, no, milk comes in a carton. You get it in a carton. It doesn't come from a cow. So I just feel that kids should get the opportunity to see real food, eat real food, and have a chance to be a part of growing it themselves. And the community is, I mean, I feel like once we get into this deeper, this next school year, I think there'll be a lot of community people who are wanting to get involved in it and say, wow, I want to be a part of that. Look at what they're doing and look at the emphasis they're making on real food. I've said that many times, but it is real food, and mm-hmm. it's just such a better product.
What's next for your program? You have a meeting with producers in January. Do you have ideas for growth for the next couple of years?
I have a lot of ideas. And I think what I would like to see this year is visiting with our producers, seeing what they're willing to commit to, and develop some new recipes for school lunch. You know, if we can commit to someone planting wheat, I mean, acres of wheat or acres of potatoes, then we'll use them. We'll use acres of potatoes. We'll buy them, and they'll be in our meals. Long term, it would be wonderful if that over half of our 6-week cycle of menus could all be farm to school. That's where I'd like to take this. It's a long time out there, but I think it's realistic, and I think it's a goal we could achieve.
Yeah, that's a great goal. Can you imagine being a farmer or rancher and having the potential to be serving to 2,200 customers a day, 5 days a week?
I think once they're aware of the volume that is necessary mm-hmm. for cucumbers, I mean, it's 200 pounds a time cut that we need to serve the district. You know, that's a couple times in the 6 weeks venue. I just think once that they find out what is needed, well, I want to be a part of it. I can give you this many, or I think I can grow this many. I think it will spread in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything else you two want to share today?
I was just going to say that in school lunch, there are a lot of rules and regulations and things that we have to follow, which is that way in any job that you're going to have. But we have found that we're able to be passionate about the farm to school piece of this and keeping things local and showing children that you can have fresh local food, and it can be a lot more amazing than chicken nuggets and chicken strips and chicken patties, because that's, you know, what kids want. That's the day and age that we're living in. There's a lot of fast food and a lot of processed food, but really getting down to the freshness and the value of the products that we're able to get to serve through the whole meal is really just our goal and what we're wanting to do with this program.
I think that any district that could have somebody like you, Carla, who's so passionate, Amanda, you're the director who's so supportive of this, and you two working to get this done. I mean, if a community can have that, that would be pretty lucky. Thank you both for joining me today and sharing this with everyone. And hopefully it sparks somebody to say, hey, I want to be part of that too. I want that in my community, or want to grow for them. And I can't wait to kind of follow along with you guys, and I'm going to sign up for your newsletter so that I can see when you're getting in that wheat and milling your wheat. This is really fun.
Thank you so much for having us. It's nice to get who we are and what we're doing out there so that people can see that really it can be as big or as small as you want it to be.
Yes, thank you.
The links to Farm to School and the Patrick Leahy Farm to School program resources are in the show notes and on randomsweets.com. There's a truckload of information, so plan to spend a few hours looking at those two websites, because there's links to grants and planning toolkits. There's a map for connecting to a network in your state, and so much more. In this episode's blog post, I also shared Carla's recipe for seasoned turnip fries and dipping sauce, so you can make it at home. And if you have an authentic school lunch pizza recipe that's scaled down so that we can make it at home, email it to me at stacy@randomsweets.com, and I'll share it on the blog for everyone. That's Stacy, STACI@randomsweets.com. And a shout out to my friend Lindy Hudson, who is the assistant vice principal at the Huron Middle School. She shared a photo on social media of her farm to school lunch when she was in a meeting, and that's what sparked my interest in this story. Thank you for pressing play today. If you liked this episode, please rate and follow Funeral Potatoes and Wool Mittens, and I will keep bringing you fun stories and people who embrace the warm and cozy spirit of everyday living in the Midwest. I'm your host, Stacey Mergenthal. Sweet wishes.